What was the sin whereby our first parents fell from the estate wherein they were created? The sin whereby our first parents fell from the estate wherein they were created was their eating the forbidden fruit.
In this next question within the Shorter Catechism, we move from the definition of sin to considering what the Bible teaches about Adam's first sin, so the first sin that came into the world. And you'll notice, as you just heard the Catechism read, that it tells us two things. It tells us the particular sin, and it tells us what it caused. So the particular sin and what it caused. The particular sin is, of course, eating the forbidden fruit. We see that in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 16. But we also see what it caused. It resulted in man's fall. We'll hear more about that in the next catechism question, but Romans 5, for example, speaks about that. So when you look at this first sin, you'll see a handful of things. We see, first of all, that it was a federal sin. So we'll talk about that more next time. We see that it is a finished sin, so it happened once. And we see that something was forbidden. Right? It was the sin entailed doing what was forbidden. So by federal sin, children, we mean that Adam was not only acting for himself, but he was also acting on behalf of all of those that he represented. So if you're not clear on that, then wait to the next catechism question and we'll spell that out in more detail. So it was a federal sin. It was also finished. So if you look at James 1, verse 15, it talks about how this is a particular sin that happened at one time, that once it happened, it's over and done with. So it's contained. And I'm mentioning that because I'm going to go on in just a second to talk about the other sins that we see in the garden. And we notice, thirdly, as I have on the board, that it was forbidden. There was a positive precept or a command that was given. They were not to eat of the fruit. So when you think about this, you think, well, what about other sins? Weren't there were other sins that we see in that account in Genesis 3. And it's true. Listening to the devil was a sin. Entertaining unbelief in Adam's heart and mind was a sin. His ingratitude for all that God had given to him was a sin. There's pride in wanting what the devil promised through eating the sin, through eating the fruit. There was rebellion that was part of what took place. They were rebelling against the authority that belongs to God himself. And so all of those things are present there, but they culminate in this one particular sin, the sin of eating the forbidden fruit. Now, some of you children may be thinking to yourself, well, you know, it seems like a rather small thing. You know, they ate of the fruit. You know, it's not like they killed a whole city of people or something. They ate of the forbidden fruit. So it seems small, but it's not small. And I want to give you some reasons why it's not small. There are several aggravations that increase the wickedness, the heinousness of this particular sin. So we notice a few things. First of all, it was a sin from innocence. So from a state of innocence, that they were made upright, good, and holy, and so they went from a sin of they went from a state of innocence to a state of guilt. So that's a cosmic leap. It's not like a person who is a sinner and they do this, that, and the other sin, and then this is just one additional sin. They had perfect holiness And from that state of innocence, they were plunged into a state of guilt. So that's far more aggravated and makes it heinous. We also see that it's aggravated because the whole human race falls as a result of this one particular sin. So you think of the number of people, billions and billions of people that are affected as a result of it. You think about the time. It was so soon after God had created them and given them all of these blessings. You think of the place in which the sin took place, right? It was in the Garden of Eden. So there's all of the bounty of a perfect sinless creation that was there. And then you think of the object itself, the forbidden fruit. The object itself was specifically forbidden. So all of these things aggravate or show how evil, how heinous the sin actually was. But if that's not enough, you can also think of the consequences. What were the consequences that came as a result of this sin? The consequences to man. So just take a look around you and see the impact on people. Babies die, and there are millions of people killed in wars, and there's all sorts of horrible impact upon mankind. It's not as if the devil came to Adam and said, listen, you know, why don't you eat this fruit? And let me pull back the curtain of history and show you what will take place. And there he pulls back the curtain and you see Adam's one son, Cain, killing in cold blood his other son, Abel, so that he's lying in a pool of blood on the ground. And look at the rape and the murder and all of the idolatry and all of the other horrific consequences that come as a result of this sin. You think about the consequences with regards to God himself. So God was in fellowship and in not consequences to God, but consequences to the relationship between man and God. God was in fellowship and friendship with Adam, with the first man that he had created, Adam and Eve. He walked with him in the cool of the garden. Now, as a result of this sin, one of the consequences is there's enmity, and you see it. God drives them out of the garden and puts a blockade, an angel with a flaming sword, to block the way back into the garden. They're cut off, right? There's enmity that exists between man and God. You think about the impact upon the world as a whole, so the created cosmos. Here I'm not thinking just about people, though it includes people, but you know, Paul says in Romans 8 that the whole creation groans, that man's sin has a trickle-down implications for the entire cosmos, so that the whole earth is laboring and groaning under the burden of the curse that comes as a result of this sin. And of course, it includes all of the sorrows that come to mankind from the world as a result as well. People are killed by viruses and diseases, and people are killed by animals, that lions and others that attack them and so on, or big, huge storms and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of sorrow. But then you also think of the consequences with regards to eternity. The consequences with regards to eternity, right? We have hell. And so this is the worst of the consequences, bar none. We have an eternal, a place of eternal torment where the righteous indignation of God is poured out upon sinful flesh. And this is a result of man's sin. So for those who look and say, well, he just ate of the tree, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, or it seems like a rather small sin. Hopefully I'm explaining to you and persuading you of how substantial, how significant this sin actually was. This particular sin, this first sin, unlike any other, has these things attached to it, these aggravations and these consequences. Another thing that I think is important at this stage, and it'll be important when we get to a later section of the Shorter Catechism, is to note that the whole moral law, was in Eden. Now, what do we mean? God has revealed himself, the standards of what he requires of us in his moral law. The moral law is summarized for us in the Ten Commandments. So those Ten Commandments are an embodiment, a summary, if you will, of the law of God. And the fact is that Adam in the garden had the whole thing. He had all Ten Commandments. He had the whole of God's law in Eden itself. And you can think, and I'll do this very quickly, but you can think about how the whole moral law, all Ten Commandments, were actually broken. I'll just list them off rather than writing them up on the board. The first commandment was broken because man was seeking to make himself like God. He was seeking to supplant God and replace God. The second commandment is broken because he was serving God according to his own heart rather than according to the prescriptions, the responsibilities, the commands that God himself had given to him. The third commandment is broken because he profaned the attributes of God. He despised the ordinances of God found in his law, in the commands God gave him. The fourth commandment was broken because now man is rendered incapable of worshiping the Lord as he ought on the first day. Well, in that case, on the seventh day, but on the Sabbath. The fifth commandment is broken because he dishonored the only authority figure in his life, his heavenly Father. Sixth commandment, he murdered himself and his posterity. Seventh commandment, he had to cover his nakedness with leaves as a result of this sin. The eighth commandment, he took what did not belong to him. He stole fruit that belonged to the Lord and was forbidden from him. The ninth commandment, he believed a lie that the devil spoke to him. And then he turned around and testified falsely to God himself. And then the tenth commandment, he was discontent. He was coveting what God had withheld from him. And so he was guilty of discontentment there. You can see the subtlety of Satan in all of this. He goes to the woman to start with, and there's an appeal to her senses. Look, see, you know, see how beautiful it is, how wonderful it would taste, how delectable it would smell, how good it would make you feel, all the benefits that would come to you, and so on. He was lying. He was actually seeking to murder Eve in Eden. And so there's this subtlety that takes place. And Paul picks up on this in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3, where he's talking to the Corinthians Christians and says, listen, be careful about the subtlety or craftiness of Satan, because just like what happened in Eden, so it happens now. He comes and he disguises the nature of sin. So it looks beautiful, it looks attractive, it looks enticing, it looks like it'll give pleasure, when in fact underneath and behind it is this world of horrific pain and dishonor to the Lord and enormous implications for us. And so we can learn something from this. God gives us his commandments, and we are to believe and receive what he's given and to love the law that he's given, realizing that it is what glorifies him. Lastly, and very briefly, why not only the devil? Why was not only the devil punished? Well, the fact is, the devil, of course, had a role to play, and he did receive curse and was already fallen and reserved for hell, as the Bible tells us. But Adam also sinned. So being tempted is different than actually caving to that temptation. The Lord Jesus was tempted maximally, and yet he never coalesced to that temptation. And so Adam himself is responsible and has ownership for his own actions and the sins which he committed. So question 15, what was the sin whereby our first parents fell from the estate wherein they were created? The sin whereby our first parents fell from the estate wherein they were created was their eating the forbidden fruit.